Hi guys, welcome to the pilot episode of the Can We Just Talk podcast, hosted by Chanel. I am joined by a lovely panel of guests, and today's episode is going to be a little bit different to what we'll get in the future. But it'd be really silly of me not to discuss what's been going on in the media when it comes to Black Lives Matter and what's been going on with George Floyd. And before you start getting bored, it's not going to be another one of those episodes or a podcast where we're just talking about and moaning about us being angry. We're going to be talking about real changes that you guys can make in order to kind of see the system change and stop being angry, really. So I'm going to start off by introducing some of our guests. The first guest that I'm going to introduce you is a graduate from the University of Brighton. She studied biomedical sciences. She's a current master's student at Brighton and Sussex Medical School, where she studies global health. And she is the CEO of Unite Us Enterprise, a health rehabilitation social enterprise, which is aimed at achieving social justice and rehabilitation and empowerment. So I introduce to you Ala Meghi. Hello, Ala.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much, Chanel, for introducing me and giving me a chance to give my opinions on this podcast. Hi guys, I do global health, and I'm great. I'm just excited to let everyone know how they can help and to hear everyone else's opinions and just to get this conversation going, to be honest.
Good. Can you tell us a little bit more about Unite Us Enterprise? Like, I hope I've done it justice, but tell me a little bit about yourself.
So, like Chanel said, I'm a graduate student now, and I'm studying global health. A lot of my research, I'm going to say bluntly, all of my research is based on Africa, the global south, and like gender perspectives. So I generally look at health and interventions in Africa and how they've been impacted by like influence from the West and how we can improve that. So a lot of my research is just researching the medical imperialism that Western countries have carried out. And through my research, I realized that as diaspora, we're just in a really sticky situation. There's not much that we feel like we can do. And I wanted to create a sort of facilitation company or an organization that just helps people achieve certain goals within their desired field. So we have four main pillars: that's social justice, empowerment, rehabilitation, and healthcare. And every initiative that we think of goes under one of those four pillars. And basically what it is people raising issues in the community and us helping them fix it, or helping them create something that can fix it. But that's what really Unite Us Enterprise is about.
We love it so much. Thank you for being here. My next guest studied at Brunel University, where she did her LLB, and she graduated, and she's a current LPC and LLM student at the University of Law, with 2.5 years of paralegal experience, both in the public and private sector. She is a former delegate on the Alito Foundation, the leadership program where I met her, and she's this co-founder of the social enterprise called Crowd, in which she focuses on empowering young people through their hair to instill them with confidence to succeed. I introduce to you Christiane Sungu. So welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. You've just basically introduced me, so I don't know what else to add to that.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about like your studies and studying as a law student.
Sure. So the LLB is like the undergraduate law degree that most people do in order to get a qualifying law degree. So I completed that 2 years ago. No, 3 years ago now, 2017. And just last week, I finished my LPC in LLM. I'm so happy. I feel so relieved. So relieved. So the LPC and LLM, LPC is a legal practice course, which is what you do if you want to qualify as a lawyer. So you've got to take the next step after your degree. And an LLM is a master's in law. So I did it a combined, so I could get like, a combined degree at the same time. So
Love it. Yeah. And you also have a social enterprise as well called Crown. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So Crown is a social enterprise aimed at empowering young women through hair. And we do this by running events, campaigns, and also workshops on different like skills that you need to build your confidence, but also more specifically how to build your confidence for your hair. The reason I do this is because when I was younger and I learned how to do my own hair, I remember feeling like so confident in myself. I remember going into school feeling like, yeah, like I'm that girl because I could do my own hair. I was slaying braids, wigs. Not actually, that's a lie, wigs was not in school. But like weave and all that kind of stuff. And I remember like feeling so good about myself. And then I started doing other people's hair, and I noticed that when I was doing people's hair, there would be like a change in them the moment that they left like my room or whatnot. And I recognised that something important about black women and their hair, there's something about it that really like strikes to the identity.
Yeah.
What Crown does is really just like build your confidence through that, because I know that we don't really get the same positive reinforcement in the media about our hair. We only tend to see white women with straight long hair. We don't see a lot of black women's hair. So for me, it's really important to like show the good sides of it, and also how you can use that to build yourself in every different kind of like, area in your life. So that's what we
do. Love it. Thank you for being here. And then last but not least, we've got a little bit of male energy in the room as well, just so everyone can hear that. My last guest is a graduate from Bath University, where he studied politics and international relations, where he spent his time as an outreach wellbeing ambassador and chair of the Race and Inequality Network. He is also a former delegate on the Alito Foundation Programme. And he is the founder of Unorthodox Vision, a social enterprise which seeks to empower and elevate diverse radical youth voices to realise their creative and intellectual potential. I introduce you, Tito Williams. Hello.
Hi. Hello, everyone.
How are you feeling?
Sorry, a bit quiet. This isn't usual. This is what I'm like usually. I have a little bit of a tickle in my throat, but yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Unorthodox Vision? Because I didn't even know you did this. So like, tell me a bit more.
Great. So we did our pilot event in November of last year. So essentially the whole, as you said, it's about getting more diverse voices, predominantly black people, into the creative sector. You might see us on, you might see people as rappers and like in the music side of things. But when it comes to actual advertising, PR, marketing, as anyone that has had a little bit of exposure to those industries knows, very, very, very like, white. And that's what leads to all those mishaps that you see, like with the Pepsi can.
Yes. With, oh my.
Kendall Jenner.
Oh dear. Kendall. So many blunders.
Like the chicken box thing, because there's no black voices in the actual agencies to shut that down initially. So the whole concept was I did a program called The Night School, which is in collaboration with a magazine called Yellow Zine, which I'm not sure if anyone knows, but it's really awesome. And anyway, we were like mostly black people. We were exposed to loads of different amazing creatives, such as Samples Manager, loads of cool people, sneaker designers. And I took that concept and I thought, it would be great if people I grew up in Barking, so it'd be great if people in from a secondary school level, the kids that don't quite know what options at university they need to take to get into, because no one knows how to get into advertising.
Knows, yeah. Yeah,
it's really hard to know how to get into there. So I took the concept of the school, went back to my secondary school, brought a journalist, a model, some musicians, some radio presenters, some writers, and I brought them all back to my secondary school. I made sure, listen, bring me the rowdy kids, the kids that you don't think like typically would access these opportunities, because I want everyone. I want got like 60 kids, and yeah, they really loved it. They signed up to a mailing list, and I matched them up with the speakers that they wanted to. So that's an Unorthodox Vision. Going forward, we're gonna have another event at a different school in Barking, and yeah, that's what we're doing so far. So
wow, all three of you doing amazing things. So my first kind of question for you guys is basically just off the back of what happened to George Floyd and the response in the UK. Like, I want to understand how you were feeling. Tito, I'll start with you, because you are a black man in Britain. Like, how does it feel? How did you feel when you first heard about what happened and the response in the UK? How did you feel?
You know what? It was only like 5 days ago or so when I actually watched the video. Because I refuse to, because like, as I kept seeing like, snippets of that video, and like even from hearing from my mum, hearing from my sister, all my friends, and like seeing those little snippets that they put in the news, my heart was like I'm sure you all had the same emotion. My heart was ripped. It looks grotesque, like the pain and all the hearing his last words, everything like that. That was really sad. I think why it struck home with me is because there's all these different lines that people use, like, I don't know, like, don't sag your pants, or don't, like, all that respect to
respectability. Oh, yeah, not wearing hoodies and that kind of stuff.
Don't wear a hoodie, don't look a certain way, don't do that. But I think I was having a conversation with my mum, and ultimately, and we were just like, mom, I wear hoodies sometimes, you know, they're comfortable. I might wear a trackie sometimes, you know, it looks nice. And like, it could happen to any one of us. They didn't know, they didn't even know George Floyd's previous history.
Yeah.
Not that his previous mattered. All they saw was a black guy that was using a counterfeit note that he may or may not have even known about. And he still got executed, literally, which is horrible. So it was just a real, reminder that, you know,
it's
Europe
nice.
And America aren't really for us, are they?
It's not so, nice.
Yeah, it was really sad.
Girls, how did you feel when you heard about it and saw like how people were reacting in the UK?
Honestly, it was just a reminder to me, like, we're just living in the white man's world. And I guess the reaction in the UK, it made me realise how much people had enough. Mm. And I guess the reaction across the world, because, again, it's just another black death that happens every single day. But the reaction that it caused isn't something that happens every day. And I think the way that it rallied everyone together and the way that it brought communities together in the UK and across the globe was just I was a bit taken aback by it. And at first I was like, is it just performative? Are people just saying this because they want us to shut up about it and they want us to get over it quickly? And I guess like I was just kind of having an internal battle with myself because I was just trying to figure out how genuine this response was because it was so big. I was like, I just don't know, because if that many people honestly believed in what we believed in, then we would have achieved
change by now.
Yeah, we would have achieved a bigger change by now rather than just a couple of protests and a couple of legal changes here and there. So I guess more time I was just sat there like trying to reflect, like, how genuine is this? Because if it was really this genuine, it wouldn't be such a systemic problem. And if these politicians and these public figures really meant what they were saying and they stood with us, then we'd be able to tackle systemic racism a bit more. So I guess I was a bit skeptical, and I still kind of am, because I think that people are joining these protests because they feel like once you protest, that's it. You've done your part. You've gone out there. You've said a couple of chants. But I don't think people understand that protesting is just the beginning. It's supposed to catch people's attentions so then we can do more and create more change. But people are just stopping there. And that's where I'm just like a bit torn by this response, because it just doesn't seem like it's genuine enough.
Yeah, you raised a good important point there about social media and people just being a bit performative or just going to protest because they want to seem like they're doing something. Christiane, did you have anything to add to that at all?
I was just going to say, similar to Tito, I have actually, Tito has watched it now, but I haven't watched a video.
Oh, no.
I can't bring myself to, but because I've heard enough like commentary and detail, I know what's happened in the video, but I can't bring myself to watch it because it's just too much for me.
Yeah, it is emotional. You're literally watching someone being like murdered in front
lynched.
Of you.
You're seeing someone being lynched. He's calling out for his like dead mom. It's just terrible. It's just heart wrenching.
Obviously, because everyone has described it and spoken on it, I know exactly what's happened, and I think that's enough for me personally. I don't think I can see it. But like Alex said, I feel like everyone's come out, and that's amazing. And I'm really happy to see everyone's come out. To speak on it. I think as well, especially because we've been in lockdown for how many months now, it's really, really like, I don't know, I feel like everyone's got like a lot of pent up energy because dropped in for so long. And I think that's why it's been as big as it is, because Black Lives Matter didn't come out yesterday. It's been around for years now. You know, people were off the world every day for the last couple of years, but this time around, the George Floyd one just went crazy. And I mean, that's literally because we've all been locked in for so long, and we're just like, anything to get us angry is going to work.
It's really good that you mentioned that as well, because what you both mentioned is like around protesting and social media, and it's kind of where I want to take it next. Like, what are your thoughts on people protesting and, well, seemingly digital protests on social media? I know I've seen like a lot of posts that you've been writing trying to educate people on why people are angry, and I've also seen Christiane, you're doing stuff with Crowned on Twitter as well. Like, people are continuing this conversation. And do you think protesting and social media engagement is actually helping to the cause, or do you think it's just a bit more performative? Like, where do you sit on that spectrum?
I think there's a very fine line between it, because I think a lot of people, they don't even read what they're posting sometimes. They don't even know what they're resharing. They don't watch the videos fully. And I think it's just a fine line between making sure that you actually educate yourself and you're then pushing that education forward, rather than you just want to make it seem like you're an ally. And I think I've just got like I don't know why, but I would rather someone, I don't think this is the same for everyone, but I would rather someone outwardly hate me than someone to pretend to be with me when they're not actually with me. So false allyship really annoys me. So like, I see people that have been racist in the past, people that have been racist to me in the past, especially in Basingstoke Chanel, like people that me and Chanel grew up with, suddenly they're posting all of these posts about Black Lives Matter. And I thank you so much for supporting us. But at the end of the day, you were perpetuating the same racist behavior that now you're condemning. And you haven't even owned up to your the part that you've played in it. And you haven't said, okay, I'm part of the problem and I'm sorry that I'm part of the problem, but now I've educated myself, I understand that. I think people are just trying to forget about their past behaviors and they're just trying to say, oh, now we're in with the movement and now we're allies. But that's where the line crosses over to just performative. You need to be able to be like held accountable for your actions. Even I'm educating myself constantly, and everyday behaviors, like I'll realize, oh, okay, that's being perpetuated by some racist beliefs, or that, okay, I'm doing it this way because like of colonial history or some sort of thing. But even I'll check myself sometimes because I know that, okay, my actions might be like construed as discriminatory, or it might be seen as like, oh, it's a product of racist tendencies or something.
Yeah.
So I just feel like people aren't really willing to look inward and admit to themselves that they were racist or they perpetuated racist behaviors. And that's where it just turns into performative for me. And I just don't really have sympathy for that types of people and those types of situations. It just gets me angry, to be honest.
Yeah. It's not like we're asking for people to be perfect. Like, people make mistakes and that's okay, but just own up and say, like, I was wrong and this is wrong. I think the first thing that people say when you pull them up and stuff, I'm not a racist, because we all have biases. It's just being able to reflect on them and act on them and apologize when you're wrong and really kind of change. Yeah.
I wanted to say that with the performative aspect, and in terms of all the white people like sharing, like I've never seen so many white people exactly like what I was saying, like people that I go to University of Bath, there's like 150 black people.
Oh wow.
Well, I graduated now, but there's like 150 black people. And then I've seen there was a protest out in Bath of like 2,000 attendees. So that was really crazy. Like, the majority of them are white people leaving the chants and everything like that. So I was a bit like, what is going on here? So I think it's a mixture of two things. A, white people, we have a lot more allies than we think. And I think what George Floyd epitomized is just how, like, it's one of those cases where it's undeniable how evil like racism is in society. And for a lot of people, they've been kind of jolted on top of all the COVID deaths of predominantly black and minority people as well. It's kind of like another truth that this is pretty effed up as a society. But I'd also say, I guess we're also seeing the Twitter bubble as well, because every time I get my hopes up with something like this, whether it was Jeremy Corbyn in 2019, whether it was like, my hopes weren't that high for Hillary Clinton, but like 2016, or like what, Brexit all over again. Every single time my hopes get up, they get crushed again, because there's a very silent majority of white people that don't have Twitter or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So it's a mixture of different factors. And there's one last thing I wanted to mention. It's cool to see like the TikTokization of like activism. Because I've seen, like, my younger sister, who's 18, is, like, sharing stuff about, like, I didn't even know who Oluwatoyin was. And my sister was, like, sharing, like, 5 articles at a time, like, describing it. I was like, who is that? Like, how do you know this? And she's like, yeah, I found it via TikTok, et cetera,
et cetera. Generation Z. It's Gen Z. They've taken activism and just, they've changed it and they've adapted it to what they think their activism is in this modern day era. Actually, I did want to say something. Tita, you said something about, you know, the white, when white people were like at the protest. And I noticed something. I went to the Brighton protest and I went to the London protest. The London protest, majority black people, you know, like very different energy to the Brighton protest, which was like 15,000 people, but 80% of them were white people. And I guess Brighton's seen as a very liberal city because of the whole gay thing. But like, something that I noticed when I was in the process was a lot of white people were kind of like, I feel like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be offensive, but I feel like a lot of white people were like hijacking the movement. And I feel like that's where that also crosses the line a bit for me, because this is supposed to be like a black led movement. We know what we want, and we know what it feels like to be black in Britain and black in the world. So I feel like this is, it's genuine. Sorry. I feel like it's only really genuine when white people acknowledge that we want to support you guys, but we're not going to take the place of leadership, and we're not gonna demand anything on your behalf.
Yeah.
This is us trying to amplify your voice, but not us speaking on your behalf.
Mm.
And especially in the UK, I feel like there's some situations where it's just woke white people hijacking the movement, and maybe like black people in the same areas don't feel like they can stand up and really like speak on it, because this person's already spoken on it, or they've already said what's needed to be said. And that was just something that kind of resonated to me, and I saw a couple of articles about it, but
it's very different as well, because that was I can't remember the little girl's name, but there was a girl who was trying to educate her parents and why she was basically arguing for her parents who were racist. I don't know if you guys saw the video, but so many people were like, oh, well done to her for educating her parents. And it's like, we're championing this little white girl who's educating her parents on the right thing to do and why black people's experiences. I don't understand why we're celebrating that should be the norm. The fact that she's educating her parents on something that's wrong, I don't really think is something that needs to be celebrated. Like, we can champion it, but it doesn't really need to be like, well done you, whatever her name was, because you're really amazing. Like, it needs to be the norm. Like, we shouldn't just have to be so overwhelmed when a white person's like, yes, it's wrong. Like, people really get, like, concept, it's a bit weird for me.
I actually want to go off Alice's point now. You mentioned that you felt like white people were hijacking the protest. But then, like, I get what you mean, but I wonder what you would have preferred them to do, because in my mind, it comes across quite supportive. I'm hearing that white people are at protest, and I can understand that we would prefer it to be, like, black leadership. But then what is the role of the white person in fighting for our lives? What do they do? Because say, you know, like you said, there's about, I don't know, 10,000 people out there, you said, and all of those people, 8% of them wanted to come and support. If you prefer it to be black leadership, would you prefer that they stayed at home? And like, what would you want their role to have been in supporting the movement?
I just feel like the white person's role in supporting us is just allowing us to speak and helping us to kind of, like I said, amplify our voice and trying to help us be heard. But I mean, in the terms of the Brighton protest and in some of the videos I've seen, it's not them, you know, chanting along with us. It's more like, you know, them creating demands on our behalf. For example, I think a lot of the reforms that we're getting now because of Black Lives, like, for example, you know, the cartoon actors quitting because we feel like black characters should be done by black people, and, you know, come fly with me and all that stuff, just the little performative things. I feel like black people aren't demanding that. No black person wrote a letter asking come fly with me to be taken off whilst their brothers are getting killed in the streets of America. No one did that. And I feel like it's just small things that are being like spoken on our behalf, and I don't really agree with that, but I definitely agree with them coming out protesting with us, showing our support, you know, banners, all of that stuff. But what I saw at my protest was, you know, just there were a lot of black people. Okay, there were black people there, but it was just white people that were leading the chants and that were leading the movements. And I don't know, I feel like in Brighton there's a lot of, you know, woke people that I've understood their privilege, but they haven't understood it enough because they still want to be the ones that are creating change for black people. You don't know what change black people really want unless you're a black person that's living a black life in the UK. And I feel like that's where the line crosses. Lines crossed there, but I think it's just when they're trying to take leadership roles. But I definitely understand people coming to protests and showing their support and banners and all that stuff, but it's just when they take leadership roles and they start literally making demands on our behalf, because then the message gets lost, and like, we don't care about complying with me, let's be honest, we don't care that much.
I think what I would say, I feel like what would be a really, really good idea is if we could do like some kind of like community meeting. Mm-hmm. I don't know, or something where, you know, like, say something's happening in your area and then like, council says, let's have a meeting and let's discuss about it. I would love for that to be organised for Black Lives Matter, so then we can actually, you know, get white people involved, get Asian people involved, get black people involved, and let's sit in a room and say to ourselves, what is it? What's the problem? What do we want from this? And like, what's action plan? I feel like that would definitely be the problem of white people not being sure of what they can do to help. Because if you sit down in a room and you speak to, like, you know, 50 Black people, and I tell you, this is what bothers me the most, this is what I want fixed, then we know that when the white people are going out there to support us and speak on our behalf, they're doing that from a place of patience, because they've actually sat down with us and they've discussed what the problems are and they know what it is that's paining us. I think that would be an issue.
Definitely. And they just, I think they need to like take education into their own hands about educating themselves about Black history and things like that, because they're not going to know the Black struggle and what we want unless they understand what we've been through. And not a lot of people want to do that. And that's one of the problems.
I think personally, so I remember like last year, 2 years ago, I saw this tweet by, I think it was like Lady Gaga or one of that type of person. And she was saying that, guys, I want to learn more about how I can help Black people. You know, it's suddenly come to my attention that you guys aren't treated that well.
Suddenly.
Can you say
I love that? Suddenly. Come
today. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like,
just suddenly. Just came up, you know, on my feed, and I thought maybe you should address it.
Oh, George Floyd. At least I like you. But yeah, so like,
it's funny because George Floyd isn't the first one. Like, this sounds like so many. He's just one that, but there are so many George Floyds out there. It's so,
apparently,
so strange.
Apparently, 126 people have been killed by the police since the George Floyd.
Yeah.
And that was last week. But just
I don't understand that.
I didn't know that. It's only been a month as well.
So Lady Gaga said, like, can you send me resources, etc., etc. And then I looked in the comments on the replies and I saw this white girl and she was like, no, don't ask Black people for work, for like emotional labor. Don't ask them for resources. Leave them alone. Go research yourself. And I was like, then I saw Black people responding and they were like, wait, she's asked, let's send her some links. So I think there's like a, I'm between Ella and Christiane in terms of your opinions, or at least from what I've heard, because I do think that to an extent white people need to do the labor, because we've been articulating our time immemorial, but then there's also, it's very hard to unlearn the ignorance that you've been bathed in right from birth. And I do feel like when we are immediately critical of even like minor improvements, then it's a bit like, there's nothing, it's very, I don't know, it's just kind of hard to kind of, because ultimately this is a white problem and white people need to change in order for the system to actually change. So I feel like there must be ways that we can bring them in and help them educate themselves.
Yeah.
Without being negativized, this movement won't ever grow past some activists in the Black Culture Archives in London.
A split between the two, to be honest, of what I can hear like all of you saying. One thing I do want to address though is that we need to be careful. So Christiane, you were saying that like, we need a group of people that that like the council will go to for support with this thing. And I think so often we get these like cultural groups, they happen in workplaces, they happen at university, they happen in all these different kind of organizations to speak for Black people, for a specific minority group. They almost become like a venting space and like a silo where people just come as a community and they hang out within themselves. So like I find that when you have these groups, people just come and then they'll bitch about the problems but no action is actually taken, or there are groups where people then go socialize and be themselves in those spaces and never actually address the problems that are out there. So I think you need to be careful about between having like a group of people where that are actually advising versus just venting about a problem and actually being a solution within it as well. And then the other thing I was going to say about in regards to like educating people, I personally am so tired of having to educate people on our problems. There are books, there are podcasts that I'm not even going to sit here. This podcast isn't for you. If you're coming here to learn about racism, I'm not going to teach you right now. This is so we can make action. I'm sick and tired of talking about the problem. Like
we've been talking about it for 400 years.
Exactly. It's been happening. Like, there's so much resource out there. You can go and search, but and there was that one post that I saw and it really annoyed me. It was the post that loads of companies were putting up and those people were putting up. It was like, I will never understand what you're doing, but I will be there supporting you. And I was like, that's just laziness to me. When I see that post, it says to me, you can't be asked to try and understand. At least try. You're asking away liability from themselves with these problems. It was them saying, oh, I will never understand, but I'm kind of here for you. I want to post something on, you know, Blackout Tuesday to show our support. But if I see something on my feed of our white friend out here saying that she doesn't believe in Black Lives Matter and thinks that we're all a bunch of violent people that abuse the police officers, which is what I saw on my feed, and I'm even now finding it hard to speak to my white friends who I know saw that post and know saw me share it and no one said nothing, but let alone on Instagram you're posting, yeah, Black Lives Matter and I'm here for you, but you're not pulling up your friends when stuff is happening. So like, you need to educate yourself as well. We can help if you're willing, but I'm no longer going to be replying to ignorant posts about people who are pretending to understand. It's a waste of my energy and a waste of my time.
I get you. I definitely agree. And when I said about the community group thing, I didn't mean like a kind of like a social club where you just go and... Am I allowed to swear? I'm about to say bitch, but... you just go and bitch. I literally meant like an actual community group, I don't know, organised by the council or whatever, like some kind of...
Official, like a collective body.
Yeah. And then you go there and you discuss the issues and then you discuss an action plan, like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Our council, this is what we're going to do, we're going to put this forward to the government, like something like official, not just tea and biscuits and let's cut out the white people, not like that. I just mean like, let's actually sit down and if we want white people to help and we want white people to actually speak for us, then like for them to understand the problems, we need to tell them what the problems are. That's what I meant. In terms of education as well though, maybe I understand your points, but I do believe that if we don't help, then how are some white people supposed to know what the problems are in terms of like education? I would feel a lot more comfortable if a white person said to me, listen, I want to know more about this, can you explain it to me, or can you direct me to this?
And I'll be there, like, are people out there who are willing
to do that. But I think ignorant, like just being stupid and saying something like All Lives Matter, then I'm not going to respond to you, I'm not going to try and educate you. But for a white person to come up to me and say, I want to know more, I want to know what to do, like the Lady Gaga's pose, I wouldn't be like...
Yeah.
No. I think when they're seeking facilitation, it's not a problem, but when they want you to explain it. When they're seeking facilitation, that's not much of a problem. I can send you a link, I can send you a YouTube video.
Yeah.
But it's when they want you to explain it intricately and they want you to, like... help, they want you to create some sort of sympathetic feeling in them, and that's like, I don't
validate the fact that it's okay, they don't know.
I
hear that completely.
There's a lot of like honor killings in like, you know, Muslim communities or whatnot, Arab communities or Asian communities. That's not something that I truly understand because it's not something that's not my culture.
You don't speak for everyone almost.
Yeah, and if that issue came to light in the news, and I could tell that this is something real, and I had an Asian friend or a Muslim friend who knew more about it, I would hope I could comfortably send her a text, send him a text and just say, I've just seen this on the news, can you tell me more about what's happening?
Yeah.
And I would hope that they would respond without feeling offended or feeling that I'm expecting emotional labour from them, because I'm just like, this is new to me, this is not my culture.
Yeah.
I do understand that.
I think there are certain people in the world who, like, if it was my friend coming to me, I wouldn't mind. But it's like when a random person will come to me, or like when I'm in the workplace and I get like a random manager come up to me and be like, Chanel, could you come into this meeting and be an expert on this? Like, Google is there for you. There are D&I consultants that you need help with. If I choose to come to you and say, do you know what, I've noticed this is a real problem, I personally wouldn't like to invest my working time to help you, then that is totally fine. There are people out there who are more than happy to do that. But I think what is, especially when it comes into the workplace as well, there are people who get jobs and then they fall into the role of D&I consultant because they're just because they're a minority. And I think that's totally wrong. And if they're willing to, that's fine. But the onus shouldn't be put on them, because there are resources, there are companies, there are businesses whose job it is to do that. I'm a Black person, I'm okay to educate my friends, my family, my peers around me, but it is not my responsibility to do so, is what I'm saying. And it shouldn't be put on someone to feel uncomfortable in that way. Sorry, Tito, you're gonna say something.
I agree. That's a bonus. So I'm chair of the Race Equality Network at my university. I'm not muted, I was scared. that's a bone I've had to pick with the uni in so many different ways, because, you know, like Bath is already a predominantly white institution, but like it's like the university loves to play devil's advocate with any time that we have something to, like anytime we have a qualm about something. So I remember, like, so not only is it, I'm not sure what it's like at other universities, you go to Brighton.
I've had many problems at my uni.
Yeah, trust is a lot. We have a predominantly black, like, student body, and we have, like, we, like, a very cultured, like, I don't know the statistics, but students-wise, it's probably, white people are probably the minority in Brighton.
Wow.
Yeah.
But there's still systemic problems, and there's blatant problems that I'm like, how? If you have, the majority of your student body is, they're black, they're Asian, they're Arab, how are you still managing to, like, have these racist, like,
kind of, you need to turn and look at the faculty then, if that's the problem.
Yeah, that's what it is. The faculty is representative. That's what it is. Like, they think that they've got an ethnically diverse like community within the university, but you wouldn't see that if you looked at the faculty boards and like the voices that really get heard at like a senior level. Like, it's all just white lecturers and white people in terms of that.
I remember the first time I came to Bath. It was so shocking because I me and my sister played spot the black person. And then we were
at Loughborough as well.
I'm not sure if anyone else had to play that game, but I played it. And then I did manage to find some black people, but they were all cleaners and all like servers, etc. support staff. So at least in our university, we found that, and this is tying back to the emotional labor point, we found that if the ACS, which has been great, or the Race Equality Network doesn't do anything. So with regards to Black Lives Matter, the university has zero plans. If I was lazy, or the ACS was lazy,
nothing would happen.
Almost nothing would get done in terms of diversity. And then our university at least had like 50,000 pounds of a diversity pot that we had to repeatedly come and ask, hey, like, can we have funding for stuff? As opposed to them proactively using it to invest in like
the D&I consultants. Bonus is then on you again.
Yeah, so the onus was constantly on black students to come and organize. If we didn't, like, if I didn't propose certain stuff for the black left in response to George Floyd, hey, maybe put out a statement, nothing would have been done. So it was pretty crazy. So in terms of emotional labor, I definitely, that's where I'd be like, yeah, like, pay people or hire people to do the work instead of, like, expecting any old black person to be in. Because a lot of black people aren't experts in race theory anyway.
We get it wrong sometimes too. I'm not a representative of everyone's voice. I'm a representative of me. And some of the views that I had aren't the same views that you guys share. So we clearly aren't all on the same page.
Like, imagine they call Dominique Samuels or whatever to be. Like,
oh, my word.
Well, guys, see her...
Is that now the black voice?
Did you see her recent thread where she was actually saying something positive about black people?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was saying that, but then did you look at the comments underneath?
No, I didn't.
Somehow.
She's been hacked and I just went off.
I follow Dominique because I like understanding how those people think. But then you look at all the replies to when she said, hey, police might be racist.
And really? Might be? Interesting.
All of you're actually kind of positive about black people. All of
the followers were like being racist towards her. So I was like, you know, is this the bed you want to... And a lion? Is this what you like?
I think black people always get like caught up in trying to be represented. Did you guys see the interview that Dizzy Rascal did on Good Morning Britain?
And yeah,
he was talking about his music. For those of you who don't know, Dizzy Rascal was on Good Morning Britain speaking about his music that he had coming out, I believe. And then Piers Morgan was like, oh, would you mind commenting on about like the Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd and all this kind of stuff? And he was like, no, not really, Piers. Like, I know black people are going to hate me right now for not taking this opportunity, but I'm not a representative. Maybe you should get like a Carla or someone who like really wants to talk about
it. You know what? I understand it. A lot of people got angry, but I definitely understand
it. Get it. Like, he is a representative of all of us, and he probably might not feel comfortable talking about it, but...
Like, if he says wrong, everyone knows that he's just going to get like killed on Twitter or whatnot. So he probably just thought it's best for me not to say anything at all.
Yeah.
Did you guys see yesterday? You know, I'm not sure when this will come out, but yesterday was Black Pound Day, the first ever Black Pound Day.
Yeah.
And the Daily Mirror actually did a thread on black businesses.
Yeah, I saw that. It's
nice to see.
I'm just thinking, people are getting hacked, aren't they? The Daily Mirror that cusses out Raheem Sterling a week.
Now, don't get mad, guys. Like, maybe they're getting woke. We need to champion this and be happy about it because we might not ever see this time again.
Oh, no, you go ahead. Don't worry. I was going to change this, kind of change topics, Karen.
No, I was just going to say, like, that's why I said we have more allies than we think. And I'm not saying that in, like...
Is it, though? Or is it just marketing strategies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I don't care.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
Intent versus impact. Impact always, in my opinion. If they realize that because of the ethical capitalism stage that we're getting into, people spend money on brands that align with their values. And if they determine that the majority values are moving towards being LGBT friendly, black friendly, et cetera, and if that companies to start moving in that direction, I'm happy with it.
Mm.
Or there's definitely going to be like loads of people riding the wave to see how long they can keep making money off it. But I think that's a plus as long as we're continuing to do the work, the activism, the movements, et cetera, alongside to make sure that actual justice is happening as well. So I don't see that as a bad thing personally.
Mm.
Even with the cartoon representatives and stuff like that, I see that as the cultural minute changes that happens alongside, like,
it's just as long as people don't understand that that's, oh, okay, we've achieved our goal now.
As long as they
understand that it's just a small step towards the final goal, not just the like performative action that we can take as enough.
Okay. Mm.
But basically, I know we were talking about the white person's role in this whole movement and like tone and things like that. And I wanted to see whether you guys, obviously, I think you definitely have, but the whole No Name and J. Cole thing. And yes. No Name has this book club. I guess if people don't know No Name, she's just an American artist, but she doesn't really focus on she focuses on music, but she's more trying to empower black people educate black people.
Let me just give some context for those who don't know what we're talking about. So there was a post, was it a post or was it a song? I can't remember. A post that went up from No Name calling out J. Cole for not being more involved in like the Black Lives
Matter. Oh, no, actually, you know, it was a tweet and she didn't call out J. Cole. She just called out rappers in general and celebrities in general. Yeah.
She called out rappers in general and J. Cole got triggered and decided that he was gonna, instead of just replying politely, bearing in mind that he hasn't really written anything on social media about Black Lives Matter, he has been supporting by going to protests and things, but he hasn't been online talking about it. But then the time he decides to come on social media or do anything in the public eye, he decides to basically write almost like a diss track towards her, basically saying that he isn't in a position where he feels like he could speak about it and she's more like educated or privileged, whatever, calling her out and saying that he didn't really like her tone. And this was obviously her reply. She came back with another track. If you haven't heard it, I'll probably try and put it in the notes or something so you guys can see what's going on. But yeah, I'll carry on.
But yeah, so like No Name's just been known to be advocating for black people and she's really like known to have a very unique voice. So she's like, a lot of stuff that she talks about and releases is just literally aimed for black people. So she always says like, so I think she released a statement about some sexual assault that occurred. And she said that she wanted people to boycott this radio show. And she said specifically at the bottom, she was like, I don't want white people to share this post. Like, this is just for the black people, for the black community, because she feels like only like, I mean, from her stance, I get, I don't know if I'm like completely portraying her opinions, but what I get is that she wants, because she feels like it's a black problem, right? And that was a black problem or in the black community, that only black people can then criticize these black people that have perpetuated this problem. So she said, white people don't share this post. Like, if you want to support us, then go look at Black Lives Matter and like support the charities there. But this is an internal issue that we need to be facing.
Mm.
And I wanted to know what you guys thought about that and the whole situation, because she's obviously she was speaking in a certain tone to these rappers and J. Cole said, oh, you need to speak to us like children, you know, like spoon feed us the information, love us, show us love, and like then we'll be more receptive to your tone. And personally, I don't agree with that, because I'm not someone that will dumb down, or I'm not someone that will sugarcoat anything that I'm trying to say for anyone. I just feel like if I'm saying it a certain way, then you should be receiving it that way. There's power behind the way that I'm, what I'm saying, and the way I'm saying it. But now, but I don't know, what do you guys think about the whole situation and the whole her calling out issues and her saying that only black people should be able to speak on its behalf?
Yeah, my initial thoughts are, I imagine that she put this on it, right?
She put it on Twitter.
On Twitter, right. So my initial thoughts are, if you're going to put it on the internet and you're going to let black, white, brown people see it, how can you then turn around and say, please don't comment on this unless you're black?
Yes. Yes. I do get what you mean. It's like, I was having a conversation with my brother about this. He wanted to talk about the fact that us as Black people need to have like a responsibility in some of the stuff that we're doing. And I'll talk about this a little bit because I've got something I want to talk about. But he was like, why should we get ready and come together and prepare and critique each other in the eyes, in like as a show for white people to see, so they can be like, oh, well, you Black people got some stuff to do too. And that's why I was iffy about this, because although I believe that some of the responsibility we have for some of the responsibility to do stuff as Black people, but why should we do that in show of everyone else to see our flaws? Because there's some Black people that I don't agree with. There's some charities that I think aren't really doing much, and I think like, you ain't doing much for the cause, you're just being performative. But I can't go and at them on Twitter because it looks like we're just not connected, like we're not seeing eye to eye in a situation that we should be. And that I think is problematic. So when she was saying that Black people comment but white people not, why are you doing that in show of everyone else? Like, why can't we just
you're asking for people to come and say why can't I comment, and you already you basically
give them access.
You've aired all dirty laundry to the people that you don't want to hear
exactly
about. So I don't know, those are my initial thoughts. I feel like I'll sit down and think about it. Maybe I can understand her point of view, but right now I don't agree with
it. Yeah. Tito?
If I can bring it back a little bit to specifically the No Name J. Cole thing, I'm probably gonna be a typical guy. But like I'm a fan of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of how J. Cole typically communicates, he's come for Kanye via like music before. He wrote a song called False Prophets. And felt like what he was saying to No Name, who didn't come for him. She wrote what mainstream rappers that talk about race but haven't said anything or done anything. I felt like when No Name came for him, it was a bit weird because he has been protesting and putting his money in these places. But J. Cole, like if you listen to J. Cole's song, it was more in the tone of, he was like, I'm like happy to learn more. And he was also, I felt like he was also speaking on behalf of Mandem. Or people that maybe can go to university and do sociology or study politics or study psychology or study these critical theories. And when they're hearing terms like privilege, when they're hearing terms like the sociological definition of racism that incorporates power and prejudice, when they're hearing stuff for the first time, because this has probably been the first time that there's been so much awareness and so much attention given to Black radical thought, you can't then be like, oh, you don't know this, you're cancelled, or you don't know this, you're an enemy, etc.
So
I don't think No Name is the person to target for that, because No Name is great. She has a book club. She's been out here educating people and dedicating her life to that. But I do think there's a large constituent of activists who are guilty of that, who are on Twitter and
shaming people
for no reason. Yeah. People that are noobs, people that have just got that, it might be 18 and I've just finally found out, like I saw Eva Appio saying something and then she was getting shouted at for being like, why are you supporting Black men and not Black women?
Oh,
because she said Black men were being more targeted.
You need to stop segregating within
our life. Yeah. Like,
but the thing with Twitter though, like on Twitter you can say, oh, I love apples, and someone will respond, does that mean you hate oranges?
Exactly.
Can't get away with anything.
You can't say anything about being
criticized. So I feel like you can't even take Twitter too seriously, because
it's not real. Even with
the intentions, someone else will find something wrong with what you said.
Mm.
I think I just want to say that, do you know what? I love J. Cole. Like, I am a diehard J. Cole fan. And when he released that song, it wasn't coming from a place of like hate for me. It didn't even seem like a diss track. For me, it kind of felt like him just trying to get her to understand it. But where I think people got angry and where he went wrong was that like Black women have always been silenced. Everything Black women say, we're saying it in the wrong way.
That's where I don't agree as well.
We're too loud. We're too outspoken. We're saying it in the wrong way. Like, we are historically, like, been oppressed historically. Our voices have been silenced historically. And it's like, at this time, you're choosing to try and change the way that a Black woman is trying to speak.
Right, I do want to move it on to one thing, because I really want to mention this and I really want to get your thoughts on this. This podcast is sponsored by the Alito Foundation. The Unito Foundation was created to provide significant lifetime opportunities for young people with high potential. That focuses on identifying and developing the next generation of leaders from communities who have historically found it challenging to access jobs due to their background. They're a social mobility charity that provides real-world and practical support to young people who possess the educational foundations, mental capacity, moral foundations, confidence, and humility required to inspire others. Their annual leadership program has supported many young people, including myself, to develop the leadership skills through mentorship and personal development training. You can learn more about the Alesso Foundation and how they may be able to support you by visiting www.alessofoundation.org.uk or by following them on social at Alesso Foundation. Alesso, a legacy for tomorrow. So, we're talking about like Black people having responsibility. And this is a quote that I took from BBC One Extra Talks. I don't know if you guys listened to it, but it was a really great show. And if you get a chance to listen back to it, please do. And they were talking about George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter. It was a special they did with DJ Ace and Shawnee B. And they were having a discussion around, like, obviously working at the BBC and what it is like to work within those institutions. And he basically asked him, like, do you ever feel like working for the BBC that you get funny looks when you talk about like your truth and you're being yourself? Do you feel like you have to leave your culture at home? And this was his reply. Now, I wasn't like shocked, but it surprised me that him as a person had said this. So this was a quote. I think I'm sometimes embarrassed about letting things slide. I think I'm a victim of loving what I do so much that I just don't want to discuss it. I love broadcast. I love the radio. I love what I do. And I'm blessed to be in this job. So much so that I don't chime up when things get awkward, or because I don't want things to be awkward. I don't want my position to be put in jeopardy. I think that's terrible. Even saying it now and listening to you guys, I know that I can't go on. So with what we said about diversity and inclusion and trying to get more people of color in power, how do you think that affects it? Because people get in these positions and they won't necessarily say anything because they're now in fear of losing their job. They like the cushy bag they're getting. They like the responsibility they've got. So they won't be speaking up about these. So I just like to see what your thoughts are on obviously what he said. I do feel a bit sorry that he doesn't feel like he can speak about these things. And I think at the same time, it's very disturbing that we've got people in positions of power who aren't speaking up when they should. What are your thoughts?
Personally, I think that it's like it's our responsibility once we get to these positions, once we get to these places, to understand our like position as a person of color, as a Black person. And we kind of need to make ourselves like, I know it's like, why do we have to do it? Why should we risk our jobs to speak on like behalf of everyone's rights and stuff like that? But I don't know, I just feel a personal responsibility to always be like checking myself to make sure that I'm advocating for myself as like a Black woman wherever I am. So, we know we didn't sign up to do this. We just wanted to live our lives and we just wanted to, you know, feel safe at work. But we as Black people, like, our skin is a protest, so we may as well speak out when we can, when we're in these positions of power. And it's just disappointing, but I guess I can understand where he's coming from. But to me, it's like, we have a personal responsibility. Like, yeah. Each of us in our separate industries, we have responsibility once we get to a place of significant power to not care to feel uncomfortable, like, not because there's people below us that don't even have this opportunity and they feel uncomfortable every day. So I just think we need to, like, get over the fear ourselves and speak out.
I agree. I think it is such a shame to hear him say that. And like you guys said, it's a thing. Especially when you know he's a person of influence, you'd think that you would use your influence for the good. Like Arla said, wherever I go, I make sure people know that I'm the Black woman here and I'm also
exactly.
Women. Currently I'm at university, I'm a BAME advocate. And like I do a lot of my uni sends me like stuff that they're planning to do, and they ask my opinion on what I think about it from a BAME perspective. So like whenever they want to like start like a new course or something, they'll send me the module outline and be like, hey, what do you think about this? Are the names we use in the scenarios appropriate and things like that? And I really enjoy that role. And also before I started university and I was working in a law firm, I was the first person to bring up the idea of doing a Black History Month project. And I was a paralegal at the time, so I was very junior in my position. I wasn't a partner or a lawyer. I just thought, I'm working here and Black History Month is coming up and you guys aren't doing a single thing. That's not okay. So I just put the idea forward and it was taken really well. So I think like we can make a change, and I think some of us need to try before just assuming that people are going to shut us down. And if you feel like you're not confident enough to say in your workplace, there must be someone that you trust, a colleague or a manager that you trust to speak for you, just to pull them aside and say, I've got some issues, I've got some concern. I don't feel comfortable saying it, but would you be able to speak on my behalf? Or like just send an email if you don't feel comfortable speaking face to face. I feel like there's so many different ways. There's so many different ways of making an influence whether you work or any kind of group that you're in.
I just think that you don't have a right to complain about the conditions of your workplace if you haven't done anything to try and change it. Yeah. And if you haven't like advocated for it yourself, I don't think you have a right. I mean, I guess you do, but at the same time, you're still perpetuating it then. You're playing along.
I just wanted to say that the advocacy is so important, especially in the workplace, and it can take multiple different forms. I remember I did an internship a program in the place that I'm currently working, and it was so invaluable to see, like, there's not many Black people there. And just to see this other Nigerian don wearing his creative shirts, got the little earring in, speaking in normal language, etc., and still delivering quality, great work, and like being respected in the company.
I think this is the case of us just realizing now that, like, although historically we've had to like kind of hide our Blackness or like contain it, and you know, wear this like mask of whiteness so that we feel like we're appropriate in the workplace, for example. But I feel like now people realize that like we don't need to hide our Blackness. Like we can act as Black as we want. We can do whatever we want to do because it's not our responsibility if it makes someone else feel uncomfortable.
Maybe just to like round things up, because I know we've gone over time, really sorry guys, but like what would your advice be to anyone who's listening who's like, I'm literally just angry right now, I can't protest, or I don't really know if I should be protesting? What would your advice be for them to kind of contribute and see if they can make real change? Tito, start with you.
Great. The first thing I would say is I'd advise reading, like, so I'm not sure what age this person is, but if it's anybody, the one thing that was really great for making me think more critically about society and history and everything like that was I read the autobiography of Malcolm X, and that was like my first like insight into like him as a thinker, what his philosophy was. And it was good because A, it's written really accessibly, so anyone can read it, it's not too long. And it definitely propels you forward. B, I'd start following, like, Instagram and TikTok and everything has made it much more easier to learn about activism and learn about ways you can contribute and put in all the lists of all the petitions and stuff there. So I'd follow some great Instagram pages. You all know them, you see them getting... And just following on Twitter people like Apple Hirsch, Akala, Kehinde Andrews. There's many more I can't think of at the top of my head. And yeah, that's what I do. Like, kind of get a sense of there's so much groundwork already that's already been done to help your activism be even easier, and so on and so forth. So there's so much material out there. Twitter is your friend. And yeah,
love it.
Read,
love it.
Basically, and follow people.
I would say, like you said, everyone is angry, and I think people should really drill down on that and understand what makes them angry. I think the way that we will see longevity in this movement is if people understand what it is that they are angry about. Because right now, it's police brutality, but not everyone is generally passionate about police brutality. But the good thing about racism is that there's so many different forms of racism that we can fight.
That's good or not, but...
It's what I mean by
quote, unquote, good.
The good thing about it is that there are so many different things that you can fight. So like, figure out, just take a moment to reflect, what is it that I'm passionate about? What is it that makes me really angry? Is it the attainment gap in the education system? Is it the pay gap in the workplace? Is it microaggressions for Black women? Is it the stereotypes of Black men being overly sexualized? Is it racism in football? What is it about racism in general that really, really like, breaks you down? What kind of like hurts you in your core? And I thought the moment you recognise what it is that really hurts you, fight for that cause, that specific cause, you know, do your research, understand what's going on, follow the relevant organisations that are already doing the good work. If there isn't any doing the work that you're passionate about, Yeah, can you write about it? Can you start your own thing? Can you speak about it? What's your talent? Are you a good speaker? Are you a good writer? Use your talents and understand that your passion will drive you forward. Like for me personally, my drive is Black women. Obviously, it's an obvious thing. It's my lived experience. Black women, Afro hair, and the experiences that we suffer because of our hair. That's my fight. That's what I do with Crowned. And the reason Crowned is so special to me is because I'm passionate about it. And I feel like we need to work on our passions. There's so much that we can fight. Like I said, the good thing is that there's so much for us to fight. And I think for people listening today, I know that there's something that you can fight. If it's, you know, racism in sports, racism in the music industry, racism somewhere, fight that cause. Like, just take a moment to recognise what it is and fight for that.
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, the most important thing is educating yourself. And I think self-reflection, like, you need to understand where, like, you experience racism, where you yourself, like, maybe perpetuate some discriminatory beliefs. And you just need to understand that, like, holistically, because once you recognize, once you have a name to the different, like, once you name everything that you go through, like, oh, that lady said that, that's microaggression. You know, I understand that that's over-sexualizing. Once you have a name to it, then you can create action and create change. And I think young people especially need to understand the power of their voices and the power that they actually have, because I think that they think that it gets lost in social media. But everyone, like all the words you say, everything that comes out of your mouth, like I said, being Black and being alive right now is a protest. So like you have power with everything that you say. And I think one thing that's also really important is the power that our money has. Like, we honestly have so much power in our economics. And like, I think that one of a big belief of mine is that whilst we're protesting, we need to start building institutions and like creating institutional change within like ourselves. So I think that if we have our own Black owned institutions, it'd be very hard to be a victim of systemic racism, for example, in a Black school. We need to understand that our money has a lot of power and we need to spend it wisely. And Black Pound Day especially made me realize how many different Black businesses there are in the UK and internationally. Like, I don't even need to like it might be a bit more expensive, I can understand that, and it might not be achievable for everyone, but where you can switch to Black businesses, like support Black businesses, support your own people and the people around you, because trust me, like, community and Black community has power. And like, just us succeeding and us getting through life and us creating these social enterprises, that's like a protest in itself. This is us like creating good like change. And I'm sure all these young people listening, they probably don't understand like that we were all in the same position that they were. Like, we were sat there like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm so angry.
Right? Like, I'm still like that
literally
now.
Like, I don't even know what to do. Like, nothing I'm doing is like changing. But like, you just need to like understand your power, your voice, and your money.
Thank you so much for all your advice, guys, because literally that is the position I was in. When I decided to do this podcast, I wanted to educate people on our lived experiences, all the things that we've learned that we want to share with the next generation and those around me and the peers. And I'm still learning from you guys as you speak. And the reason why I wanted this pilot episode to happen specifically on this subject is because, right, I'm so upset about everything I was seeing online, and I was just angry. And like, I still didn't have the power within me to articulate myself to the posts that I was seeing on my Facebook pages. And I just wanted to just grab them and be like, oh, shake them. Why don't you understand? And that was just making me angry. So I was like, what can I do about this? I might not have all the answers, but I have got a voice and I have got a good network of people who might have the answers. So let's bring them all together. And this has been an amazing episode, guys. So thank you so much for joining me on my first episode. I'm happy.
It's been great.
Where can everyone find you? Like, what are your socials? Where can everyone find you? And like, what have you guys got coming up with your individual lives and your social projects, your enterprises? What's going on?
You can find me at Christiane Sungu on LinkedIn, and you can find me on at XTiane on everything else, like XTIANNNE on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me on Crowned.
Yeah, Crowned.
Crowned UK, Crowned with a K, because I'm Congolese with a K.
Give it to them.
Yeah, give them some history there. Congo was spelled with a K before we were colonized, but that's off topic.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
But if you follow us on social media in the next month or so, I'll definitely have something ready for people.
Hi. So you can find me on Twitter. That's I'm an addict, so I'll probably spam you. My Twitter name is @unpayingTito, and then on Instagram is Tito Mo Wills. with a Z, and on LinkedIn is Tito M. Williams. In terms of what we have, what I have coming up, I should be releasing an article very soon.
Wow.
So I'll post it there. You guys will see some little sign. And for an Orthodox Vision, yeah, we're planning on doing our next event. Well, we don't know because Corona, but like we're planning stuff. And hopefully by the end of the year, we might have a hopefully social distance event at a local school. So just share and like publicize everywhere if you can.
You guys can find me on at Unitas Enterprise on Twitter and Instagram, or my personal Instagram and Twitter, which is A1NM with an underscore. What do we have going on? Actually, I've got a couple of articles, really, like I'm waiting to release them. And it's just about Black women. So Christine, you might be interested. But it's just about the impact that colonial history's probably had on Black women's health. So yeah, that might be a bit interesting. In terms of United Enterprise, we're actually trying to collate an ebook that's just like a summary of all the Black revolutionary texts that are most important, because I think that a lot of people haven't read a lot of the Black texts that have been like released and things like that. So we're just trying to collate like a 30-page ebook that people can kind of read easily and like that can help them understand the Black struggle a bit more from an activist perspective. So once that's released, we'll let everyone know. But apart from that, we're just constantly educating on our Instagram, so follow us there.
Perfect. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me. I'm so excited. And yeah, we'll just keep track of what everyone is doing. So thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to the pilot episode of the Can We Just Talk podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed recording it. Please follow us on our socials at CWJ Talk on Twitter and Instagram, where you'll find more information out about our guests, receive sneak previews of upcoming episodes and bonus content. I've been your host, Chanel. This has been the Can We Just Talk podcast, giving you the tools and knowledge to become pioneers of your own futures.